Okay, let's commence the press conference, please. Please, could the photographers finish their work and please take your seats? Thank you very much. Hi, good morning. Good morning, as I was saying. Welcome to the press conference of the film, which is projected in the section Pearls, Seaberg. We've got with us to present the film and to answer your questions the actress Kristen Stewart and the director of the film, Benedict Andrews. You know how this works? Raise your hand, we'll give you a microphone, and we'll translate for you. Can you both hear me? I hope so. Good, thanks. Hi, good morning. Over there on the left, on the left. I always thought that Ginsberger had committed suicide, but now I have the doubt or whether she was made to commit suicide. Kristen Stewart, do you believe that this film has made you use the good use of fame, made you think about the good use of fame? And in any case, what would you like to invest that fame in that you have to change the world, perhaps, which seems that one becomes an actress to do that, or at least to, that's what I imagine. So what do you think about all that?
First part of that's pretty dark.
I can do that if you want.
I mean, you can take maybe the first one.
Yeah. Okay, so just before Kristen answers that more specific question, in terms of the openness of the question regarding Jean Seberg's suicide, after her suicide, her ex-husband, Roman Gary, said the FBI killed Jean Seberg. He didn't necessarily mean literally. He meant through the psychological pressure and brutalization that the film shows, that pressure pushed her over the edge. There is some speculation and some discussion due to the circumstances of her death, whether it was a murder. Her body was found 10 days after she disappeared. The amount of barbiturates and alcohol in her body meant that her body was found in her car, and it meant that it would have seemed quite difficult that she could have driven. So there is some mystery about her death. Roman Gary also said that Jean tried to commit suicide on the anniversary of her daughter's death, each of those 8 years, which I find incredibly tragic. And I think it points to this sort of incredible tragedy in her life. But the film shows that she suffered for her political idealism and for her openness of spirit. She suffered a kind of political persecution and attack and pressure that contributed to the tragedy of her suicide.
In terms of having a responsibility as an actor, as a storyteller, as somebody who's widely watched, Jean was the type of person who really had this deep desire to be looked at because there was something. I mean, there was some sort of light that she knew was beneficial. I mean, I know, it's such a strange impulse to want to tell other people's stories because they hit something inside of you that you think that you can sort of highlight. And I think she was always drawn to stories that bridged gaps and made people feel closer to each other rather than further away. And I think that seeped into her growth in the way that she related to people and her politics and her dreams and aspirations all coincided with being like a really. I didn't, unfortunately, wasn't able to know her, but you can tell that she's a good person. I think in all the ways in which I relate to other people, whether it's how I choose projects, align myself with other creative minds, or to be more specific, vote or even have conversations with press that are then, pervasively consumed, all of those things are reflective of who you are and what you believe in, and that's a responsibility in itself, and I acknowledge that for sure. It's a wonderful position to be in, to be able to share yourself and become as close to sort of like minds as you possibly can. So I feel really lucky for that in the same way that she did, and that can also take a toll, obviously, because everyone doesn't feel the same way about everything, especially in such a sort of polarized climate that we live in now. And to sort of have the gusto and the commitment to the things that you believe in is not the easiest thing, but again, it's like it's just such a wonderfully privileged place to be. Yeah.
Hola, buenos días.
Hi, good morning. I would like to congratulate the director for making a film which is right adjusted in time vis-a-vis films that are excessively long at times. But the question for the director is, this film talks about how a government, defended by certain laws, can destroy a person or several people. How do you think this film can talk to us in the present day, and especially to the younger people, attracted by the presence of Kristen in the cars? These things will continue to occur nowadays and continue to happen in the future with governments that act in that way. Thank you very much.
In the period that the film depicts, in the late 1960s, America is a turbulent time. The country feels like it's at war with itself. I think that feels very familiar at the moment. But in the movie, we see in its kind of infancy, or in a kind of analog form, the surveillance culture we now live in its kind of very micro form. So I think in the movie we see so many aspects of our culture in a kind of petri dish. We see the DNA of what will grow up to be our culture now, both in terms of the use of surveillance as a tool to invade private lives, to obtain and to manufacture information that can be used as a weapon against political activists and against dissidents, how a state can use the machinery of surveillance to destroy activism and dissidents. And in a way that the film, in looking at this, the psychological cost and the emotional cost of that, very, very close up on Gene, but also on the young FBI agent Jack, and on the activist Hakim Jamal and his wife Dorothy and their community. In looking at that, we see in a way now what we can all, like that, be pulled into. That the recording equipment that is used in the movie, we see the effort needed to put that into look at somebody's life. Now we all carry that around on our phones and our cameras, and that mechanism can be suddenly turned against us by a repressive state at any moment. And I think in looking at Gene's story, we also see how the power of celebrity, but also the use of kind of public activism can be seen as a threat to the state. The FBI character says, "I don't want my girls reading that it's hip to hang out with revolutionaries," and how that kind of discourse is kind of controlled and managed by the state. We also see in the movie, particularly through Vince Vaughn's character, the kind of manufacturing of what we would now call fake news, when they create this story about Jean in order to destroy her, and that idea that the media and the whole cultural situation is engaged in a war, and we need to know how to sift through that, and we need to know how to look for truth in that, and we need to know how Jean does at her press conference to speak truth to power.
Hello, hi. Congratulations to you both, first of all. The movie brings up briefly how the actress gets severely injured because of the recklessness of the director. So I was wondering, how do you usually deal in this project or any other project with this kind of relationship? Do you ever worry that you're going to get traumatized by a reckless director, or you're going to traumatize someone if you're not careful?
You just throw things at me. It wasn't even an accident. I was like, oh, I mean, okay, I'm like joking. Sometimes things don't translate. Everyone's like, one of the most beautiful things as a performer, which I don't like to use that word because it definitely implies that we're faking something, that you're performing emotions or a story in a way. Like the best way is to get completely inside of something and lose yourself completely. But the only way to do that really properly is to have somebody in charge. And so it's a risky business. You have to choose well. You have to subject yourself completely to a subject and to an environment and a set of causes that are being held really preciously by another person. It's really, in my experience, the only way that something truly singular and honest and worthwhile happens. Yeah, you know, as an actor, you try and step in and protect yourself or control anything in any way. It usually, hurts the cause. You can do like an immense amount of preparation if you want. You can really you can really put yourself in the right position in order to know that you've done what you can to succeed. But at the end of the day, like, I find that the most dangerous, really fulfilling and rewarding experiences come from giving yourself fully to the experience, which is being held by the director. It's a singular thing. Yeah.
I would say two things on it. One is that for most of my grown-up life, I've been lucky enough to be a theater director and to work with actors in the kind of laboratory of the theatre rehearsal room, where there is kind of nothing but you, the actors, and the room to play. And in that space, you have to make a place where it's safe to be dangerous and a place where it's safe to go to the limits of human behaviour. And that has to be... I'm in Pursuit in the theatre and as a filmmaker in raw, open, truthful performances. And I want to get to that place through working with actors who will be brave and actors who will go to those places. And that's a real, it's a dance together, but you have to create a space where it's kind of safe to take risks. And it's a very fine line. I want to be in a space where there's a kind of push and pull with the actors, where you're searching and discovering together, and when you're going on a kind of, a search together. In terms of Preminger, I would not endorse any of the things that Jean found so brutal in her relationship to him. And as a young actress with very little experience, as an older, experienced director, he kind of very much brutalized her. In terms of his use of that shot from the accident that happened on the set, he didn't want that accident to happen, but in that moment, he had the best reaction. He had the shot. And that ruthlessness is also part of a director, and especially in film. And, like, the director has to have that ruthlessness to go, that's the shot I got. But, you know, you got to get it.
Yeah, that's funny. No, I also completely... I think that there are some people that abuse that power and that it becomes more about them than it is serving the story. I think that there are egotists that are attracted to that job. You have to be somewhat insane to say, I'm going to lead the charge of, like, 200 people and lots of money and lots of time, and you know what? At the end of the day, it's my choice, all of it. It's like it's a very presumptuous position to take. But the only way that you can do that is with sort of like insane gall, and that's when people make good movies. And I, like he said, totally don't endorse the abuse of young women in film. But at the same time, sometimes magic happens and it hurts, and it you know, okay.
Hi, good morning. I would like to ask Kristen. Hang on. I'd like to ask Kristen Stewart. How did you document and study your character? Jean Seberg. What most surprised you? What details were the ones that you most talked about with the director vis-a-vis her life and what the story is told in the film? But what's most surprised you about the character of Jean Seberg when you did all the previous documentation and all the study to portray the character?
I think if the question's about what surprised me about this whole experience and getting to know her as intimately as I could is how unintimately she's known in the public, but how coveted she is. I mean, in the realm of cinema, she's a legend, she's an icon, yet it is not a foundationally known thing that she was so completely harpooned and in such a violent way. And so her ultimate eventuality, the way that her life sort of unfolded, I think is the most interesting thing about her. And I was just continuously shocked to be involved in something that was shedding light on such an unknown story. Because both of us, I knew Jean Seberg purely and only from Breathless. I think that's weird. Sorry, I can just hear myself speaking, which is strange. I think what surprised me most was my first impression of her being the most alive it possibly could be, just the most present and honest and sort of ricocheting honesty that she had in Breathless that was really formative in that time. I'm not a cinephile by any means, but that performance was defining. And people really connect to it, and it's something that still is just an iconic performance. And the ways in which she was impulsive, and daring, were stripped of her so completely by the end of her, not only her life, but in the way that we're able to see her life, her performances became sort of remote and dulled in a way that was really vulnerable and beautiful to watch, but at the same time, really only substantiated by the knowledge that we have now, which is she was being stolen from. And so therefore she didn't have as much to give at the end of her life as much as she had a lot to protect. And that protection was beautiful to watch, but now that we know exactly why and all the inner workings of her life have sort of come to light, I think the most surprising thing was definitely having my image of her and my sort of idealized view of this person dismantled by the truth of the attacks that she sort of had to endure throughout her life by the U.S. government.
Right, that was Hola, ¿qué tal? Buenos días.
Hi, good. Direct for the director, one for the director, another one for Kristen Stewart. For the director, I'd like to know whether you could go further in depth about this FBI agent who goes to the other side, is like a sort of Edward Snowden. And I think it's very interesting that Hollywood continues to show these types of characters, which is glorifying them when, unfortunately, the reality is Obama persecuted him. The figure that's glorified in films, but in reality is a lie because the government persecutes them. So therefore, Kristen Stewart, could you tell us in the film, you said that the revolution needs stars. I think that's one of the quotes. What would be your revolution? Feminism or sexual diversity?
In terms of the Jack character, I by no means want to glorify any aspect of the surveillance machine. And by showing what I wanted to show with him was a young soldier who is in a dirty war, who doesn't realize the dirty war that he's involved in, around him by showing the way the Vince Vaughn character works and the way the Colm Meaney character works and the way that room of men works, I wanted to show the kind of persuasive and insidious power of a repressive government machine. We pull one character out who is he's a fictional character. But what I wanted to show by having him become this kind of whistleblower, albeit in a very private way, he shows that to Gene. But a character who has a moral crisis by realizing the damage that he's doing to someone else. So that we, on the one hand, we show this machine very, very brutally working against Gene. We show both perspectives in a way. We show the effect on her, but we also show the mechanism of the watcher. And this is what interests me very much. In a story that is about an actress, someone who is used to living in the public eye, someone who is used to showing their most private life in public, to explore the question of voyeurism from both sides. So in that, we needed to then show the person who was watching. And I didn't want him to only become a sick, obsessive voyeur. I wanted, through his contact with watching this woman break, that made a change in him. And I think that is the important kind of secret thread of the movie, is that ultimately is about the interweaving of these two lives. These two young people from opposite sides of the political spectrum who in the end have this very difficult final meeting where they acknowledge what happened between them. They also try to start to acknowledge their place in the bigger picture and the other damage around them. But I was very interested in this meeting between these two strangers who've been on opposite sides of a dirty war. But in no way did I want to glorify or show. We don't know what happens to him either, so we don't know what his. We see the other guys in the FBI starting to turn against him very hard as well, and I suspect there is no career for him, and it's interesting to me to show someone from the right starting to undergo a political change and imagine what that means for that character in the 1970s.
There's like so much to stand up for nowadays, obviously. I think it's pretty clear which side of the spectrum I tip onto. The power of my voice, the power of the work that we can do is immense. I acknowledge that completely, while also standing up for the type of person that I am, which is not a loud person. But I think if you're gonna ask me like what my causes are, they're so obvious. I think gun control, climate change, like equality, all of those things right now, like, you know, the most humanitarian and very base issues are the ones that hurt me and the ones that I would like to, you know, I mean, Jesus Christ, maybe try and like have something to do with. There's like one, I mean, I think my feminism is, I wear it like a second skin. I think that's pretty obvious. I think the movie that I want to make is really confronting, and it's called Chronology of Water. It's an adaptation of a memoir that I think is one of the most jarring and really one of the first honest coming-of-age stories. And then further than that, one of the most honest self-realized female stories that I've ever read, and it's all true, and it's just devastatingly gorgeous, and I think probably going to be like if I make it true to my own perspective, quite difficult for people to watch that don't support that commitment to the truth of feminine identity that I think has never really been reflected in film in a prevalent way. And then in terms of like making those affecting change and whatever, I'm never going to be standing on a soapbox screaming at people, but I think that I wear my politics pretty clearly, and there is like a little short that I want to make that's also quite jarring, that isn't put together in any sense, but I think gun control is gun control and climate change are just like, I think that we're all like sitting here shaking in our boots on both of those subjects, so those.
Sí, enhorabuena a los dos.
Hi, congratulations. Congratulations for this interesting and interesting film, intense and interesting film. I wanted to say two things. This woman, activist, political activist, free, and uses her fame for her political ideals and commitments. It's curious she abandons Europe, specifically in May 68. She leaves Paris, she goes back to US, where she was born, where there's a context which is completely different. That contrast, I imagine, is intentional, and I thought it was very interesting. Just like Jack, the FBI agent, I'm not too sure where this parallelism could be made, but he, the agent from the Stasi, who's spying, he is someone who believes in the system, for example, just like the FBI agent. He's talking about another film. He talks about Captain America, for example. He can't be more American because you see the comic. Those aspects are really well defined, but all of a sudden when he finds out what this woman's doing, she's managing with her activism to filter into those people and change things. So my question is the following. Was that intentional, that parallelism with the life of the others, that is, say, a person who believes in the system, and all of a sudden he discovers another possible world that is possible. He sees that something that has to be criticized. This character, for example, that are in the system are going to continue, but he changes to a certain extent. May 68 in America, and then this parallelism with the character of Jack. I'm not too sure whether you see whether those parallelisms exist.
I hope all of that was still intentional.
Yeah, yes. He was referring to the fact that Jack. Yeah.
The interesting thing is, you know, you have her straddling two. Jean straddles two worlds. I think that's a very fascinating thing about her. She's a girl from the Midwest, from Marshalltown, Iowa, who ends up being married to Roman Gary, living on the Left Bank, the star of Abu Rusuf, and she's between these two worlds, and at the same time, she's still wanting to go back to Hollywood and do kind of conventional cinema and be a star. So she's between these two worlds. When she leaves, you know, you have the first scene where Roman Gary says, "Look, I'm not going to leave now. There's too much going on here," and she goes over there to an America, which is also in 1968 in its most turbulent year of history. Martin Luther King has been assassinated in the month before. There've been riots. She's going into an equally turbulent situation. So those parallels were important for us. But I think an interesting thing is that the movie doesn't really show that. It's kind of, you know, you hear it on the radio in May 68, and you know that it's going on. But it's the battlefield is the private space, and the battlefield is in those microphones going through walls, and in the bedrooms, and in the meeting spaces. That's where we see this secret war going on. In terms of the parallels with the lives of others, yes, there is a similar thing in that character goes through a moral transformation, and someone who has been involved in a kind of repressive organization starts to identify with the people who have kind of been his victims. I guess for me, I was also looking a lot at the paranoia thrillers of the 1970s. The Conversation is a particular reference for the movie, but also other films like The Parallax View, and that atmosphere of kind of tension and uncertainty was also important. And I think a difference with something like the Lives of Others is this kind of intersecting of Jean's story and Jack's story, almost as a kind of love story between the two of them, so that the story is not 100% about his transformation, but in a way about the touching of these two lives rubbing against each other. He's invisibly with her through nearly every frame of the movie. We know he's there. She senses someone's there, but can't really know until that final scene. And in the way that becomes a kind of exploration of the truth of their encounter as well.
And how people that think that they're dissimilar, that there's a sort of baseline through all of us that if we have any faith in equality and connection in any way, you go, oh wow, those people couldn't be more different, yet they are, like he said, rubbing sort of to them and until the end, like quite unknowingly. And that surprise is really enlightening and really beautiful.
Final question. Hi. For Benedict, seeing the films, Hollywood films, that focus upon real events for a director, is it much more complex to direct a film of this type? I ask this because of trying to achieve documents, because it's very difficult to achieve documents, and some of them are top secret, for example. Or do you have the director can have the license of including in some scenes something which is fictitious, something from fantasy? Basically, is that a greater responsibility for the director or not?
It's a great question, and also especially as I said, we're coming from the theatre where I'm used to working with, you know, great dramatic literature where the responsibility and truth is to do with the dramatic situation and to do with in going into the complexity and raw humanity of a dramatic text is to touch an audience and to affect some change in an audience in the event of the theatre. And to make something happen in the theatre. And that's always been my truth. And in my first film, Uno, which is from a play, but deals with a very real situation of abuse, but is completely fictional, there was a truth to kind of look at the emotional consequences of someone who had been through that, but it's not a documentary, it has to be specific. This is very tricky in that this is a real life, and as Kristen has said, this is a story that many people do not know aspects of. So I guess for me, I took something that Jean said when she looked back at these years, it was like one long nightmare where she didn't know what the truth was and what the reality was. And we're dealing with portraying something where someone's truth is destroyed. You could almost say that that's what the movie is about, is how a truth can be destroyed and an openness can be destroyed. And we watch that happen kind of in real time, and we watch the decision-making process in the FBI happen. All of the FBI aspects of the story are fictional, in that those characters are created by the writers, but they're created from the real documents that can be found and from research and study of the tactics of COINTELPRO, which was the FBI's counterintelligence program, which was aimed against activists. And the tactics that are used in the movie, whether that is calling a spouse of an activist to say that they're having an affair or bugging or the destruction of relationships that we see in the movie, they are real and documented from the tactics of this secret part of the FBI during this period. The documents that Jean reads in the final scene and the letter that the Vince Vaughn character prints, they come from real documents that are available, albeit redacted. Throughout the movie, and also the biography of Jean Seberg, the biographies you can read from this period, they are kind of contradictory. There's also something fictional about her life. Romain Gary wrote a book called Chien Blanc, The White Dog, about this period. Carlos Fuentes wrote the book Diana, the Goddess Who Hunts Alone, about their affair in Mexico during this period. And all of the biographies are also, they have contradictory facts. So I'm not trying to make a documentary, and you can't. The facts also differ. But we try and weave in some of the few real things we know about Jean. For instance, to Hakim Jamal, she says, it's all the same, isn't it? What's happening in America, the war in Vietnam and the racism in America, it's the same place. We read in a biography a report of Jean saying this to a reporter at a party one night. So we kind of take those things. So in making any movie, there is a lot of condensation for dramatic intensity. All of the stories in this movie, Romain Gary's story, Jean's story, Hakim Jamal's story, Dorothy Jamal's story, all of those things, we see only the tip of the iceberg. They all had fascinating, turbulent, complex lives that we are then trying to distill down into the drama and tension of the movie. And my way to do that was, again, this question of the interlocking lives. So the logic of what the movie wanted to look at was the interlocking of Jack looking at Jean and Jean being looked at Jack and their journey together. So you have a responsibility to the life, you have a responsibility to try and find the truth of the life, but in doing that, there is no such thing as a complete story anyway.
So you have to decide what to distill down and focus also for the kind of dramatic tension of the story.
Bueno, muchísimas gracias por esta.
Thank you very much for this interesting press conference. Thank you, Benedict Andrews, the director, and Kristen Stewart, the actress. Thank you very much to all of you. Cheers.